Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. Greetings and salutations. It is a pleasure to be back with you once again. We have so much to talk about this week. The major Supreme Court decisions that were handed down this week. We're talking about affirmative action. We're talking about DOMA. We're talking about the Voting Rights Act. There's so much there to talk about and so much there to kind of cover and analyze. We're also going to take a look at the Trayvon Martin's case. We're going to talk a little bit about the witness. There's a lot of going on in the blogosphere about the witness that was on there this week. And we want to kind of recap that for you as well. Also, Paula Deen handed out this apology. I wish you could see my air quotes there. But we want to talk about this and much, much, much more. But before we get started, I would like to bring on my co-host. Now, most of you know her. She is the chief operating officer and the executive director and executive producer of Current Events. Without further ado, I present the song and introduce to others no other than Jima Hill Cook.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Wonderful. Okay, so Jima, let's get started right away. With respect to the Supreme Court decision, I would kind of recap or go over them real quickly. So the affirmative action case really was Fisher versus University of Texas at Austin. Now the issue was it was a challenge to the school's race-conscious admission policy. Now the case, Abigail Fisher individually sued the flagship state university after her college application was rejected in 2008 when she was a high school senior in Sugar Land, Texas. Now, CNN is reporting that the arguments that was presented before the case was that Fisher claimed she was turned away in part because she is white, despite being more qualified than some minority applicants. The school defended its policy of considering race as one of the many factors, such as test scores, community service, leadership, and work experience to ensure a diverse campus. It appears that the conservative majority has the votes to strike down this policy in some form. Now, this was a landmark decision because of the implications presented here. Jim, what do you think about the Supreme Court decision around affirmative action this week?
Well, okay, so on the one hand, it held in place, you know, the fact that it still is needed. But on the other hand, I think it's going to still cause major issues in private institutions and allow states to kind of come in and backdoor their way through to do what they want to do. I don't think it was as definitive as it could have been, and I think that's going to cause some issues later on down the line.
So now I'm going to read the New York Times perspective on this decision, and I want to get you to kind of weigh in. It kind of left me perplexed, especially the way the decision was handed down and the implications, especially the future implications behind this decision. Mm-hmm. And here's what the New York Times had to say. They mentioned Justice Kennedy explains here that while the courts might give consideration to a university's judgment in devising a plan to reach a racially diverse population, the effects of that plan do not receive the same deference and must be proved to be narrowly tailored to the goal. And that is up to the courts to ensure that a program does not make race or ethnicity the defining feature of the application. Justice Kennedy is saying that the appeals court was too deferential to the university and its efforts to bring a critical mass of minority enrollment and have applied through tough standards of constitutional review. Now, the court concludes that the Court of Appeals did not hold the university to the demanding burden of strict scrutiny articulated in Gutter and Regents of University of California versus Blake, because the Court of Appeals did not apply the correct standard of strict scrutiny. Its decision affirming the district court's grant of summary judgment to the university was incorrect. The decision is vacated and this case is remanded for future proceeding. In short, it seems like they just says, okay, we're not going to consider race. The burden of proof is now on the university. What do you think about that?
Hey, well, I think if you look at affirmative action in its totality, they want to make it be about race, but it's not just about race. And so, when you look at how what the complaint was or what the fouling was, it based it solely on race. It didn't think about other things in terms of diversity on the campus and all the other credentials that the students have to have. I mean, you just don't get to accept it into a university just because you're black.
Right,
I mean,
you
still have to have met all of the requirements. You know, they still have requirements for that population. So it's not that you just get to just walk in, I'm black and I get to go in. You know, I'm going to go to Harvard, I'm going to go to wherever you want to go. You still have to qualify. You still have to meet the basic levels of qualification. So I think, you know, that's why it's kind of a mixed bag in this, because it's kind of like the Supreme Court really didn't want to deal with this one. So as they say in the media, they kind of like kicked this one down the can. They kicked this can down the road a little bit and put it back, you know, in the appeals court area for them to kind of, you know, go back and take another look at it. But I think once if you take race out of affirmative action and you start just looking at equal access, and I think you and I were having this conversation. I was having this conversation with William Patrick, our son, and one of his friends. We were in a car on our way back from the summer program, and one of the questions we were talking about was gymnastics. And so when he said he did gymnastics, the little girl kind of chuckled at, like, that's not a boy's sport. And I was like, well, what do you mean it's not a boy's sport? And so we had this conversation about what was boy sports and what was girl sports. And I had this, and I'm having this conversation with 6 and 7 year olds about how because of people have access to do any kind of sport they want to do, not just something that's supposed to be just for girls or just for boys, but it's equal access. And that's what affirmative action does. It gives you equal access. I equate it, and this might be a stretch for some to understand, but I equate it, you know, also with getting into any kind of long-term relationship or whatever you do. Once you get in there, you still got to do the work to stay in there, and you got to do the work to graduate. Because it's all about getting into college. You can get into college, but can you stay in college? Can you do the work to stay in school? Can you do the work to do what you have to do? So no one's giving you anything. I don't know a professor that's giving out grades. You know what I'm saying? So
the, absolutely.
Literally. The, you know, the dark spot, you know, is that to make it be about race keeps us divided. But as Reverend Jackson said yesterday, you know, women have benefited more from affirmative action, if not more, maybe equal, as black people have, white women at that. So I think, you know, keeping it about race always makes it a divisive issue. And if people were to really think about what has been allowed to happen because of affirmative action, they would realize that it's been a benefit to all of us, not just to one group of people.
Yeah. So, interesting point, interesting perspective, and I would like to hear from the audience out there. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So the court also handed down another opinion this week, and it was about, it struck down DOMA. Now, for those of you that don't know, I'm going to kind of recap what DOMA is. DOMA is the Defense of Marriage Act. It was instituted Windsor versus the U.S. Now, whether the issue was whether the Federal Defense of Marriage Act violates equal protection guaranteed in the Fifth Amendment's Due Process Clause as applied to same-sex couples legally married under the law of their states. Now, the cases, Eddie Windsor was forced to assume an estate tax bill much larger than those other married couples would have to pay. Because her partner was a woman, the federal government did not recognize the same-sex marriage legally, even though their home state of New York did. The law known as DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, defines marriage for federal purposes as a union between a man and a woman. Now, the legal issue is whether the federal government can deny tax, health, and pension benefits to same-sex couples in states where they can legally marry. This week, the Supreme Court struck that down. Now, what do you think about the Supreme Court's decision on this, Jima?
Well, I think it's unfortunate that people have been denied the right to marry the person of their choosing, to receive the benefits of such a relationship, and then been asked to do more than everybody else because of that relationship. So I think, you know, this should at least begin to put things on some sort of even footing as it relates to how we treat people that don't necessarily believe what we believe on certain things. But it doesn't answer all of the questions. But it does, as it did, free up those out in California to go ahead on and begin to begin to get married and live out their lives the way they want to live them out. So for that, you know, that speaks to, you know, where we are, I guess, as a country on some level. But it doesn't answer all the questions, but it's a good start for them, I guess.
So for the most part, I think people have, in my opinion, have a problem separating the legal aspects of the DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, vis-a-vis the faith or spiritual or religious aspect of same-sex marriage. Most people, they try to argue that this shouldn't happen because of their religion, their belief, their faith, and things of that nature. But this has nothing to do with faith. It has everything to do with the law. And so when you, as an individual, choose a partner, whether that person is a man or a female, if it's same sex or different sex, it was a matter of law in which how do you handle the estate in this particular instance? How do you handle taxes? How do you handle if I want to leave something to my partner? These are the issues that were brought before the court. It wasn't about faith and religion. Why is it so hard for people to separate church and state?
Because they live under the notion that this country, and I'm using air quotes here, was founded on some sort of principle that they claim to be Christian principle, which I find extremely hard to digest when the teachings of Christ does not mirror anything of how we treat people. So I find it hard to all of a sudden have all of these Christian values when it's about things that we like. And so, you know, once again, Reverend Jackson, in his infinite wisdom, made a statement yesterday that he said, we live in our faith, but we live under the law. So whatever your faith is, you know, whoever you pray to, that's one thing. But we live under the law, and that's the law, and that's the Constitution, and that's what we have to abide by. And so people have to separate. They have a big deal about separation of church and state and keeping things, you know, quote unquote, in order until it comes to gay marriage. Then all of a sudden, it has to be based solely on whatever their religious beliefs are. But we don't all believe the same thing. We are a nation of unbelievers, believers in Christ, Muslims, whatever, with Buddhists. I mean, we have an array of things that people can find themselves believing in or not believing in. So to put yours up on a pedestal and say mine is the right way and we're going to go by this, then, you know, I think we have to be careful with that. I think we need rules, and I think when we say thou shalt not, and everybody can agree that the Ten Commandments, I think, goes across all of them, then that's one thing. But when you get into trying to categorize sin, which if you ever listen to this show, you know how I feel about that. When you get into the position of trying to categorize sin as one being more or bigger than the other, then that's when you create you disenfranchise people. That's when you make people not feel comfortable to be who they are. There's a lot of things that people do on a daily basis that go against my moral fiber, but I don't live with them people. You know, I don't have to associate with them. I just don't. I mean, I don't do crack, so why I'm hanging around crackheads? There's just a lot of things I just don't do, so it has no bearing on my day-to-day life. So we've got to do better at not trying to compartmentalize sin and make this one bigger than all the rest of them, because it's not. It's not. At the end of the day, when you meet your maker, whomever that is you've been praying to, I pray that he has grace and mercy for you and allows you to come in based on however you approach him that day. That's all. I don't know why we can't separate. I don't know why we can't separate when we can separate and excuse away all the other sins, but for this one, we can't seem to find any sort of common sense and any sort of compassion. And it's so railed in hate and vulgarity and disdainment for a whole group of people that it's sad. It really saddens me. But we don't have that same hate and disdain for, you know, the person that's fathered 12 kids by 10 different women, and yeah, he might be standing in the pulpit preaching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we afford him grace and mercy.
Right.
We can't afford this person who's been with the same partner for 40 years.
Right.
you know, who's had no outside relationships and no outside issues, who's been faithful and committed to the same person for 40 years, but we want to turn our nose up at them because they don't look like us, or they don't, we don't like who they're sleeping with.
Right, right, right. So this is the second major decision that the Supreme Court has laid down this week. I want to talk about a third one, but before I go there, the Voting Rights Act, I want to ask you a simple question about this Supreme Court. Now, by all accounts, most people would consider this court to be a very conservative court. But I can tell you two landmark decisions this year alone, they have seemed to be more of a liberal-leaning court. Now, of course, we were all present when they made the decision on health care and how they upheld that law. And now they go out and extend same-sex marriage rights by removing DOMA. What is this court, liberal or conservative, Jimmy? What's going on here?
It's by no stretch is it liberal. So we can dispense with that notion quickly. So no, it is not a liberal court. It is a conservative court, and it's become and the Supreme Court is not supposed to be partisan or political for that matter. And some things that this court has done since Justice Roberts has been the chief, there's some questions there. It raises some apprehension. The short answer, no, they're not a liberal court by any stretch of the imagination. And so we just have to take each decision for each decision, because if they were liberal, they would not have done what they just did to the Voting Rights Act. That's for sure.
Well, that's exactly what we want to talk about after the break. You don't want to miss this segment. This is going to be something to really listen to. So I'm hoping that if you're out there in caller land, or you're out there in the chat room, that you call in, get involved in the conversation. We're about to talk about the Supreme Court's decision on Voting Rights Act. And I want to ask a simple question. Is this a slippery slope? I'll tell you what I mean by that when we return on the other side of the break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages. Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Bloom friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TAILORMADE101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, we've been talking about the Supreme Court's decisions, and the first two, you can kind of go either way, right? Most people will argue for affirmative action. There's a, and it's been a debate for many, 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 many moons. The DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, was struck down, and majority of the people is moving in that direction with respect to respecting same-sex couples and respecting their rights. At a minimum. But this thing about the Voting Rights Act, I'm not real sure what happened to the Supreme Court when they made the decision about this one. Now let me recap, as I did the other ones, about what the issue was, the case, and also the arguments. Now, CNN did a wonderful job breaking these things down, and then of course we'll talk about the decision that was rendered. And moreover, we want to also mention what Texas did immediately. When I say immediately, I mean immediately after the decision was handed down, what Texas did. So the issue at hand was that the continued use by the federal government of the key enforcement provision of the landmark Voting Rights Act of 1965. Now, the case involves Section 5, which gives federal authorities open-ended oversight over states and localities with a history of voter discrimination. Now, any changes in voting laws and procedures in those states must be pre-cleared with Washington. Now, there was several states that had what was proven to be using practices that were unfavorable to certain people when it came to registering to vote or even voting practices altogether. And so what the government said was, look, if you do anything, you change boundaries and you change your laws, you do anything around those like that, we need to know about it because you have a history of doing it badly. So we want to kind of have oversight. Now, there was some provisions was reauthorized in 2006 for another quarter century, and counties in Alabama and North Carolina subsequently filed suit, saying that the monitoring was overly burdensome and unwarranted. Now, all the parts of the 16 states are currently covered under the provisions. Other states are not covered by the pre-clearance provision, even if they, too, might discriminate against minority voters. Now, in a separate high court case from 3 years ago, the conservative majority suggested, but never fully affirmed, that the continued use of Section 5 may be soon nullified. And this week, they struck it down. Jima, what do you think about this particular Supreme Court decision? I know we kind of talked about the other two, but this one to me was very significant. And I ask you that in the context of the last election, where they tried to put voter ID laws on the books, and they was openly, overtly making opinions about the things that there were measures they were putting in place that would help Romney win the election. Although none of that kind of panned out, but there were multiple attempts at trying to shut down people's right to vote. So what do you think about them now moving this out of the way and now giving states basically a free-for-all to go do this, whatever they want to now? What do you think about that?
Well, here's the problem. You know, the justice, I think it was Roberts that made the statement in his writing that if he didn't make, if he didn't say it directly, he alluded to it in his statement that because of the voter turnout during the last election in terms of the number of minorities, and I think African-Americans and Hispanics voted more. This is the first time that their vote, there was more of them that voted than white people. So because of that, there is this feeling then that whatever was needed around voting rights is no longer needed because people have the right to vote and they go and vote. The problem with that is that a lot of the schemes and plans that were out there during the time of the election last year was stopped because of the Department of Justice. It wasn't people didn't show up to vote just because there was a push to stifle that right to vote, and people got angry about that and came out to prove a point that you will not take my vote from me. I am going to show up to the polls, and I'm going to stand in the line for 7 hours or 9 hours or however long it takes for my vote to be recognized. So that is what the, you know, the high numbers was about. So for the Supreme Court to say these states no longer have to do that is a grave injustice to the one man who sits in Congress right now, Representative John Lewis, whose head was bashed in for trying to get the right to vote. It spits in the memory this month of the death of Medgar Evers, who was killed for trying to get people registered to vote in Mississippi. It spits into the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech that's coming up, and it spits in my face. Let me say that. I'm gonna make it personal. It spits in my face as an African American woman whose right to vote has now been placed back under some sort of submission. And as you were alluding to in your opening, as it relates to the state of Texas, within 24 hours, the Attorney General was already talking about for the state of Texas that we will implement these voter ID laws immediately.
Crazy people.
Right, and I'm not sure exactly, you know, I have to do my research and find out what that means, but I know what it means. It means people have got to get in the business of finding out what's going on. And we don't have to wait till another national election. Whatever upcoming election is happening in your city, your council, your city council, your school council, whatever, you need to make sure you're registered and that you have everything you need to be able to vote. Because all elections are important, all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you were alluding to what Chief Justice John Roberts said. He goes on to say, our country has changed. While any racial discrimination is voting, and voting is too much, Congress must ensure that the legislation it passes to remedy that problem speaks to current conditions. He's saying everything is fine. Let Congress go out and deal with it now. Let them do something that's more relevant, more up to date. And so it's interesting for them to take that perspective. Says we're going to remove this. It's incumbent upon Congress to now do something about it. Now, that goes back to your secondary point about getting out to vote, because we and you mentioned this the other day about this young girl you was talking to, and she was like, "Why should I worry about voting? She's not even a voting age yet, but will be." But this attitude of why do I have to worry about voting when we do it only every 4 years? And what's unfortunate about that comment is that if we just look at voting every 4 years, we end up missing the point about these congressmen. We end up missing the point that the president of the United States has an impact on who sits on the bench and who can ultimately hand out a decision, a majority decision like this. And so it is incumbent upon us as the American people, because we really do have the power if we exercise it, to really get involved early and often, and not to be talking about this every 4 year thing, and really get involved in our local politics, but because it is the one that really has the most impact on us, more than you would say national politics.
And therein lies the issue, because if we only vote every 4 years on a national level, then you're missing what's happening in your home state. I mean, Texas is in an uproar right now, not because of what's happening in Washington, but what's happening in Austin. So when you have a governor who's insisting upon, once again, living under his faith as opposed to living under the law, because we've already it's already been decided upon in terms of, we're talking about abortion now. So he needs to not try to force his own personal beliefs onto the world and onto the state of Texas. That decision has already been rendered. But if you only vote every 4 years, then you get what's happening in Austin right now. You get Governor Perry, you get a House that's ran by Republicans, and you get a Senate that's ran by state senators, and then you get laws thrown at you. You get laws made that will have a direct impact on your day-to-day life. You know, whether or not I have to ever make a decision about whether or not to have an abortion or not, it is still my decision to make, and I should be able to go somewhere and have one, or go somewhere and have that conversation with someone, and not be ostracized and made to feel like, you know, I'm less than human because I'm not ready to bring a child into the world. Forget all the other stuff you want to try to put on me. But if I'm not quite ready and I've made some decisions and I've made some mistakes or some things have happened to me that I didn't plan on happening, you shouldn't try to take that away from me. So our voting is connected to everything. And when you restrict my right to vote, you're just not restricting my right to vote for the president of the United States. You're restricting my right to vote in my mayor's election, my council election, my state representatives, because now I have to have whatever ID they say I have to have, whatever that means. Whatever state-issued ID that I did not have to have before, I have to have now. So now I have to, and we talked about this last year, what is that going to cost me when in certain cities, in certain areas, there's not a DMV for me to go get a state-issued photo ID? I don't drive, so I don't need a driver's license. So I need a photo ID, and I have to get there, and you're cutting public transportation. You see how all of these things are working together? So you cut public transportation, and I don't have access to get there any other way. So now I can't vote because I don't have what I need to be able to. I don't have the internet at home to go online to find out what I need. I don't have access to that. So your library is closing at 5 and 6 o'clock in the evening. I don't have access to get to the library. I mean, it's just so many things that we've placed stumbling blocks in front of that's making it more difficult. Voting should not be this difficult. And it saddens me that people are so afraid. Justice Roberts says that's right, we are changing. We have changed as a nation. Things are not like they were when the founding fathers sat down, you know, that in terms of numbers of people. All of these people were always here. Black people was here. Native Americans was here. Hispanics was here. We was always here, but we didn't have any power. Voting gave us power. And now you want to take that back away from me. And therein lies the problem. And if I sit back and allow you to do that, shame on me.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
If I don't press my local state representatives on this issue, shame on me.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to stand up and say what's going to be tolerated and what is not going to be tolerated. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, I want to put a pin in there.
I want
to put a pin in there for
they
a minute.
They think
I want
it's
to put
just black people, mm-hmm. But voting affects everybody.
Yeah, so let me put a pin in there about something you mentioned. You used the word, or Chief Justice used the word, our country has changed. And the reason why I want to put a pin there for a minute is because demographically, our country has changed. The minority is really becoming the majority, not in one isolated group, not African Americans by themselves, not Asian by themselves, not Latinos by themselves, not Native Americans by themselves, but collectively, they are becoming a majority. the last presidential election clearly demonstrated that. And if you make an attempt to say, hey, we're losing the numbers, then we must put in measures so we can maintain power. And so I'm postulating now, but if you look at the big picture and the demographic shift that we're going through, when you can't, and this is what Reverend Jesse Jackson says all the time, you keep changing the rules, right? If you have a level playing field and you know the rules and the rules are published, typically the best man wins. But if you have a situation where you say, I don't want you to read, I don't want you to work, I don't want you to vote, but I'm superior, but you're putting all these different measures in place so that you're holding me back, that means you need a head start. And only weak people need a head start. Only the lesser of talent or ability need a head start. Only people that if I need to sit down and I'm going to race you, I'm going to give you a 5-10 meter head start. I'm telling you right now, I know I'm weaker than you. I know I'm slower than you. So what I need you to do is to give me a head start. And these measures that are put in place to surpass the vote, to make sure that that people are not having the ability to travel, to go, and to not have public transportation, is because they want to remain in power. Second thing I want to mention. As you said, that voting is involved in everything. We think about just the election, but it's really around everything. Martin Luther King Jr. got that. Mandela got that. President Obama got that. Do we get that? As the American people, do we understand the power the vote has? Because if it didn't have any power, why would people go through this extra effort to try to suppress your vote? That should be a key indicator right there to most people. To say, hey, these people are voting in record numbers. We need to put in measures so they can't. Make it more difficult. We're not going to say, no, you can't do it. But if I move the vote poll to Alabama for you to vote in Texas, that means you got to get there. I'm not saying you can't vote. I'm just saying that the polling place is now in Alabama. Go do it. So it's very incumbent upon us, and you mentioned it, and you said it so eloquently, as you always do, about the fact that we really need to be very cognizant of that voting is involved in everything. I would like to hear from you to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. We're going to take another break, and on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the landmark trial that's happening this week, the Trayvon Martin's case. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Seema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's T-A-I-L-O-R-M-A-D-E 101.com. MADE101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, Jim, I want to shift gears for a moment. I want to talk a little bit about the George Zimmerman's trial. Trayvon Martin is really not on trial here. It's George Zimmerman that's on trial. He's the one that murdered the young man, and so we should talk about it in that regard. But I want to talk about a little bit about this, what they call the star witness this week, which was Rachel, and how the media, written and national TV, television media, how they try to destroy Rachel's character this week. And I also want to talk a little bit about how the African-American community responded to her and her demeanor on the stand. Now, Jima, what did you make of, first of all, her testimony, and then second of all, her demeanor as the lawyer was questioning her?
Was trying, as a defense attorney, he did what he was supposed to do in terms of trying to rattle that particular witness. So his technique, his style is very apropos for what defense attorneys do. However, where he made his mistake is, he wasn't successful, because regardless of what he tried to do around her character, whether or not she lied about why she didn't go to Trayvon's funeral, all those other things are sidelined issues. She did not change her story about what happened that night from where she sat on the phone listening. And that's what it comes down to. She was the last person to hear Trayvon Martin's voice. She was the last person to talk with him, to have any interaction with him outside of George Zimmerman before he pulled the trigger. So she has something that nobody else has. And so I think in his attempt to try to discredit her, it went on for too long. I think it was 5 hours or more. And I think, you know, what we didn't know the day she started testifying, we found out later, is that she had already had a deposition with this attorney as well. So she kind of already maybe in her mind had picked up on some things about him that maybe she didn't like. So that could have been why her affect was what it was when she was talking with him. We're talking about a person that really did not want to be involved. And so we're trying to assume and make assumptions about whether or not she's literate or illiterate, and her affect was flat, and she talked dumb, which I'm not really sure what that means. She was talking, her English was bad. I know a whole lot of these rappers on TV right now at the BET Awards, they English is bad too.
I'm telling you.
I don't see us up in arms about that, you know. So, you know, we and I said this last week, we did it again, you know. Before anybody else can say something, we say it about ourselves. And then we want to get mad when somebody else does it. And so there's been some flack from some that did go out and say some things about her, because as her testimony went on throughout that day and the next day, we began to see that it was, she was, when she came back in for the second day, she had a little different aspect to us. And maybe she was a little bit more comfortable. Maybe somebody talked to her and said, it's okay. You know, you don't have to be all hard and tough. Go ahead on and show your emotions. Because I saw a lot of times she was trying to hold back her emotions. I mean, I think she heard the last sound and heard the don't, you know, or stop or whatever she said. So I think we were quick to judge, which is who we've become as a nation. We have become a nation that's quick to judge. We have become a nation that don't understand the real meaning of investigating. We've become a nation that just takes things at face value and don't really care about what the truth is. So here this young lady is, 19 years old, and we want to talk about the fact she's still in school. Well, I applaud her for that, because I know some kids that drop out at 14. I know some school systems that'll kick you out by a certain age. So the fact that she's still in school trying to better herself, the fact that English is not her first language, and that she speaks several languages, I mean, how many of us speak more than one language? Nobody. So, you know, we got to be real, real careful about that. And I think, you know, the first day we did her a disservice, and by the time the second day ended, you know, people had kind of turned the corner a little bit and kind of, you know, made up for some of the things they had said the day before. But as you stated at the onset, this trial isn't about her either. It's about George Zimmerman and whether or not he had a right to shoot Trayvon, period. That's what this comes down to. And, you know, at the end of the day, if George Zimmerman had stayed in his car, we wouldn't know who he is anyway. But he didn't. He made a choice to get out. And once he chose to get out the car and start following that young man, then anything else that happened, it happened. Whether Trayvon was beating him down like he stole something, you just can't walk up on people following behind them and it's dark outside and raining, and I'm asking you what you want and you telling me who you are. I don't know that to be true. Just because he said he was neighborhood watch, that don't mean nothing. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Been kidnapped
right.
Because
right.
Somebody said, my mama told me to come pick you up, you know? And
right.
So I can't fault Trayvon for questioning that. You know, we got to think sometimes and think about it. Like Reverend Jackson said, when a woman is walking alone, we've told women to put mace in their purses just in case. So when she's walking alone and somebody is following behind her, she don't stop and turn around and say, okay, here, take it. She's fighting. She pulls the mace out of her purse. She don't throw her arms up and throw her legs open and just say, go ahead and attack me. No, she does something to protect herself. And so we gotta really think about that, and we don't. We don't think about it. We think
yeah.
about the little bubble of the world that we live in that we've made to be so perfect, and we know it's not.
Right.
We know it's not. And so that's where we struggle at. And so I hope week two is coming up, you know, with this case, and we'll see some different things. I don't know. I don't know where the jury is right now on this case, because we've had a lot of good testimony on both sides. So that's why we have a jury to make that decision.
Yeah. We're going to go to the phone lines right now. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. The phone lines are hot and blowing up. We're going to take a call right now. Okay, caller 4644, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Patrick, I'm calling from the Midwest. My name's Pianki. No, it's
kind
of late
Pianki,
on your show.
How's it going? Appreciate your call.
But I really appreciate those Supreme Court rulings. I think that the one on Section 5 was correct. The one on the defense of marriage was correct for obvious reasons. And, you know, that, you know, things seem to went pretty well. Good dissent coming out of the jurors. I know that there's a lot of concern about affirmative action, but I think affirmative action is going to have its day at the funeral parlor too pretty soon. But I was happy to see the Supreme Court throw it back into the states. Proposition 8 was a correct ruling also.
Why do you think it was a correct ruling?
Well, as the jury said, you know, they had permitted same-sex marriage. Then they came along and with referendum and, you know, try to do away with it. For a state to do something like that is totally wrong.
Yeah. So you think the Supreme Court was 3-3 this week?
Yeah, I do. I think they was 3-for-3 in this
particular session. What about the Voting Rights Act, though? I mean, I'm gonna steal a line from Colbert here, and he kind of mentioned if you have an umbrella and it's raining outside, and you're not getting wet, you don't throw the umbrella away by saying, "Hey, everything is fine now." I mean, isn't this similar to the fact that the reason why it was instituted initially was because, you know, they had demonstrated wrongful practices before, so they put this around them so they wouldn't do it again. So, if you don't have evidence of that happening, isn't the ruling showing that it's working?
Well, when you come in the house out of the rain, you usually lower your umbrella. But the thing is that the reasons why that was put in place back in 1965 no longer exist. And, I mean, look at the progress that blacks have made in the South. They outvote, as a percentage, whites in the South. Matter of fact, they outvote blacks in the North. So, no, indeed. How long are you going to leave it on? How long are you going to continue to impose those type of restrictions on those concerned states for 1,000 years?
Let's take a look at Texas, for example. They tried to institute some voter ID laws, right? And so here we are again. As soon as the Supreme Court removed the restrictions, now they institute them right away.
Well, the Supreme Court has said that voter ID laws was constitutional.
We're playing that game again.
You know, Supreme Court had already said that voter ID, picture ID, that is permissible. And I don't see anything wrong with voter ID. I can see where some of the arguments that some people was born in an era when they didn't keep records and it was entered in the Bible, where there need to be some exceptions made for those few. But what's wrong with obtaining picture ID and photo ID and so on?
Okay, part one is when you look at the fact that in order for you to register to vote, you need an ID. That's sufficient right there. Why is there something additional that you need? Moreover, when you're talking about people that don't have access to obtain the proper ID, it's not just an ID. It's a specific type of ID. And then you're talking about, what about people that don't have driver's license? What about people that don't drive? What about people that don't have a home address or things of that nature to be able to verify, like homeless people? And so all the restrictions around the ID is not just the ID.
Well, if a person was born in a state and has a birth certificate, and at some point in time he or she becomes homeless, well, that birth certificate should be sufficient.
But it's not. It's a lot of things that should be sufficient, but it's not. It's just like the college student that's in college in certain parts of Georgia. Now that college student's ID is no longer going to be allowed for them to vote where they're going to school at during the time of an election. And it's only at certain colleges that's the problem. That, you know, if they were at a state college, then they could use their state ID. They could use their school ID. But if they were at Morehouse or Spelman or Clark Atlanta, then they're not going to be able to use their school ID. So it's not as cut and dry as you are making it out to be. So that's why it's a problem, because of all those states' little nuances just like that. So all those little things that are allowed to happen in every state, whether it's the South, the North, it's not about the number of people that showed up to vote or the number of people that are voting. You should have the right to vote. You would think that having more people voting, whether they black, white, green, or purple, is what we would want to have, as opposed to restricting it and saying we don't want this certain caliber or we don't want this group or this block of people to have easy access. We shouldn't be restricting the right to vote. We should be encouraging it. So it's easier to go and buy a gun than it's going to be able to vote. That's the problem.
Well, I agree with you.
And there's no way that we can make this be right when we've had so many people that have been disenfranchised already.
Well, I agree with you, but states have a right to set the criteria on as far as voting is concerned. And I don't see where there's any – if you don't have a driver's license, get a state ID. But I've read Mississippi, for instance, requirements for an individual citizen of that state to vote, and it doesn't seem like to me that there's anything that's beyond the ordinary.
But that's your world, though. Have you lived? Do you know how it is to live in Mississippi?
I have never lived in Mississippi. I live in Missouri, but I think Missouri has some more stringent criteria than Mississippi is. But there are people that vote in Mississippi. Blacks vote in Mississippi and don't have any problem.
Well, it's just not that they don't have any problem. They've been protected. So now you take away the protection, and there will be problems now. That's the thing about the umbrella.
So
yeah,
people that's been voting can no longer vote. People that's been voting, so blacks that's been voting can no longer vote after this decision.
No.
It's going to make it more difficult because I have to. You're going to require me to have things that I didn't have to have before. So let's say I had an expired state ID, and that was still my correct address. I used to could vote with that expired ID. I'm not going to be able to do that now. Let me finish. So now I got to go and find my birth certificate that I don't know quite where it is. Now, and I don't have the money to go get one. You're not offering me any waivers to assist me to get this. I don't drive. There's not a local DMV in my area where the bus is going to take me to. So how am I going to get it?
Well,
how
you should keep your.
The thing you're requiring me to have. The reality of the situation is that what I'm speaking of is the reality. You're talking about what should be. I'm telling you what people's lives are like on a day-to-day basis.
Well, people have to be more responsible, ma'am. Come on now. You have to have valid ID. You can't use a expired driver's license even at the bank, even if the teller knows you.
Yeah, but everybody don't drive. Everybody don't have access to vehicles.
Well, then you should be able to get a state ID.
Tell me how to get it. Tell me how to get it.
How
am I going to
get there?
How
am I
going to
get
a state ID?
Well, I'm not going to. How are you going to get there? How are you going to get to the polls? And the Democrats or Republicans, the party should make sure that their constituents have all the access to be in compliance so they can participate in the electoral process.
So now you're saying the responsibility is on the party, not on the individual. At first you were saying it's the individual responsibility.
It's the individual's responsibility to go vote, but you see parties all the time providing buses, providing all sorts of means in order to get their constituents to the polls.
Yeah, but
you got 1.5 million people. Let's say 2 million people who all of a sudden now don't have access for a whole lot of reasons. Whatever those reasons are, they could be elderly. They they could be homeless. They could be young people. It's a hodgepodge of people who are going to be affected by this. They're not all black and brown.
The voting place is not the same place as DMV.
Right, but who's going to assist me? If I don't have the means to go in and get this state ID, who does that? Where does that responsibility lie?
The responsibility lies in the state government to make sure that they have outlets where people can go get state IDs. This isn't like making an old fashioned blueberry cobbler, a blackberry cobbler. I mean, it's simple. How long are they going to continue to impose these restrictions on these states? For another 100 years? Come on.
Until they can demonstrate.
How long were the restrictions posed on the people that didn't have a right to vote? How long was that? How long was that restriction?
Well, I agree with you. The Jim Crow methods that they have in order to prevent blacks from voting in the South was wrong. But those methods do not exist any longer.
Come on, you don't believe that. You don't believe that.
So when blacks go to vote, they got to count how many bubbles you can get out of a bar of soap and, you know, how many marbles are in a jar.
They just tell you now you got to go get a voter ID.
People should go get a voter ID. How come you're not teaching the principles, the objectivity of voting in your schools? So children at the same time, then there should be a mechanism to register and provide your high school students with the proper credentials so when they get ready to go vote.
Yeah, so that's again, you're saying that you're passing the responsibility onto some other institution as the individual. Today, there's nothing in preventing the individual from going out and voting. Today, they're saying, now you have to have a specific type of ID And so what you're saying is you're putting more restrictions around a person when to vote, when it should just be something that we should all be
able
to do.
As long as the restriction is applied across the board, it's not against the law. In African-American community, and it's a society fault, if your people in your society, your community, don't understand or don't have the access or whatever, I mean, those things should be worked out. There's nothing stopping you from doing it.
Yeah, you're assuming that we all have the same means, right? I mean, that's a major assumption that you're making. It says that since the law is in place, everybody should be out and be able to go out and do it. Remember, now you just talked about Jim Crow, you talked about slavery and the impact, the economic impact, the social impact, the environmental impact that it has on these communities. These communities are still recovering. They haven't completely recovered. Now, granted, there's a lot. People have come a long way. But when you're talking about the numbers, you're talking about a percentage of the numbers, we're still not there yet. The African-American community is not there yet. And so when you say that we all have this individual responsibility, I agree, but we don't all have the same means or the measures to be able to get out and do these things. So when
let me ask you something.
An additional component, then you're saying – that you're taking them back to those days. Go ahead.
Let me ask you something. Here in St. Louis, they brought in 80,000 Bosnian immigrants. They all registered to vote. None of them are unemployed. They have built an economic system for themselves in South St. Louis City. 80,000 Bosnian residents, refugees. Mm-hmm. So you mean to tell me blacks who've been here for how many hundreds of years cannot get that together? Where these people only been here less than a decade.
And how were blacks brought to here? How were blacks brought here?
These immigrants came on airplanes. I can't see the last time blacks been brought here on ships. Come on, ma'am.
But again,
we're talking
about the legacy
that
stuff left behind.
But you cannot negate the systemic issues associated with that. I'm not going to let you excuse it away. I'm not going to let you marginalize that because it still has an impact today on a whole lot of things. Don't misunderstand me. I do.
The legacy of slavery has nothing to do with voting.
Wait.
Most of your children don't even know the history of slavery. Come on.
First of all, let me correct you real quick on what my children know.
We talking in general. We can't use our own individual. It's unfair to use your own individual experiences. Come on now. I could do that also.
Let me help you with something. What I'm saying is, let me finish. We cannot marginalize and act as though whatever happened in slavery was oh so long ago and there hasn't been any residual effects because it has. But in the same token, there has to still be, I agree with you, some personal responsibility.
Absolutely.
I agree with that as well.
We can't go back in the past.
But the playing field has to be leveled. It has to be even. It cannot be even one day and not even the next. You can't tell me the rules of the game today, and when I show up to play tomorrow, you've changed the rules of the game. You can't do
ma'am,
that.
Ma'am, nobody, if
the
they tell you.
The
here we are,
are
talking about the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
That's what I'm saying. 1965, when they put that in place, and you still want to have those restrictions on those states as this happened yesterday. And as far as going back in the past, two of your most proficient activists, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, spoke about this Dean lady and said what she said was back in the past.
Yeah, I mean, she was wrong, though. I mean, even though they said that, she still was wrong.
When do you pay attention to what they say?
No, that's not true. I'm gonna clear that up for you too.
I'm reading it right here in the newspaper, ma'am. Jesse Jackson and Shelton both said that what she said was years ago, as if they were supposed to dismiss that. And you just proved it.
No, but that's not the only issue with Paula Deen.
That's the smoke screen. I'm not as concerned about her using the N-word as I am
with her practices and with how she treats people with federal money. That's what I'm more concerned about, her hiring practices.
Let's take a look at the lawsuit.
Her allowing... certain types of people, only using light-skinned people to run the cash register, not having any diversity in her management, and she's at the casinos where her restaurants are located. That's a bigger
really
problem for me than her using the N-word. So,
well,
I
the thing
that
is that she
that
haven't...
was something in the past. We all have a past. But that doesn't mean I can excuse it, though.
But your complexion that you hire people has nothing to do with the law, man. Come on.
You can't discriminate on a person. That's the law. You can't discriminate because of color.
So what is a black person as identified according to as identification of a minority? Does it say light-skinned black? Does it say dark-skinned black? No, it just says black.
But you can't create a hostile work environment and have discriminatory practices at your work as the owner.
So how is hiring a light-skinned complexion person and putting them at the cash register going to create a hostile work environment?
Because of everything else that you're doing in the business, sir. It's not an
isolated
thing.
It's more of that. Yeah,
it's
a
creation.
So you got light skin on one side,
so
dark skin on the other, and they don't get along.
Monkeys. Your brother walking around calling people monkeys, that's my little black monkey. You're not promoting anybody else. Everybody that's in management is white. You can call that what you want to call it, but at the end of the day, if I'm working in that environment and I'm feeling what that feels like when I go in there as an individual, if that's me, I might have a problem with it. You may not. I might feel like that's a hostile work environment.
Because you
I
may be okay
feel like
with that.
You're doing some things that are,
yeah,
that
you
are
may
discriminatory.
Be okay with
that. Well,
and you
people
may be
should,
okay with it, and
people
I may
should
not.
Take
that's
those complaints to the people should take
that's
those complaints to the people should
and
take those complaints to the EEOC.
Yes, she did.
That's
why there's a lawsuit. I mean,
well,
we're
great.
Not talking.
Then let due process work its course.
Yeah, we're in agreement there. So the comment made about what she said in the past is not the what we feel against Paula Deen. It's just the matter of the lawsuit and her practices. What she said, yeah, we can all excuse that away. Yeah, she did it way long time ago. But her business practice is what's the concern. So now let's go back. I want to revisit something. And first of all, let me thank you for your call because you really stimulated some great, great conversation. It's always good to hear another perspective, although it may be some misguided in my opinion. But it's good to know people out there that think like you because it still lets me know we have a lot of work to do, especially when it comes to the perception of an African American community. Because you made a comparison of these immigrants that come in, and you made the assumption that they're doing something that African Americans could be doing, but they're not doing. And I want to kind of put a pin there. I want to ask you a simple question. And the question is, do you believe that the business practices that we just talked about with respect to allowing African Americans to not be in management and the fact that these immigrants come on and get these jobs, does the African American community, do you think they have the wherewithal to have to do the same thing as those immigrants? Are they capable of doing those things? Do you think they have the same opportunity as those immigrants?
Well, I mentioned Bosnia, but I have a lot of Nigerian friends and other African friends. Matter of fact, my wife is Ghanaian.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they come over with they utilize this country in order to extract wealth from it.
So, but do you think the same opportunities that they afforded, you think the native African Americans have that same
opportunity? Oh, sure. You have opportunities. I mean, take Detroit. Now, look at Detroit, for instance. Detroit was a 90-some-odd% black city, and you had a all-black city council. And you got black people sitting around a table enacting minority hiring practices. Now, whose fault is that?
That's not a common practice. I mean, that's an isolated instance.
It's not common?
No, that's not
common. Is it not common when you have a city that's majority black and you got the black city council sitting around a table enacting minority hiring practices where they're going to give blacks, the majority of the population of the city, a percentage of the work rather than a majority of the piece of the pie? Whose fault is that?
So you're saying is the African American's fault because that's happening. I just can't believe
it. And you know it too, sir.
No,
come on, we have to sometimes And we have to sometime come to the truth of the matter and say a lot of the problems that we experience lies within our own lab. Look at your public schools. Come on, look at your public schools.
So what's wrong with the public schools? What's your opinion of the public schools? Are you saying it is just the education system, or is it more to it than that? Because it has to do with jobs.
It's a shame the way black children are used as a commodity in the public schools. It is a total shame. Busing was a total shame.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that.
Well, I just don't agree with the whole notion of the schools, though, and how they're used as a commodity. I don't agree.
They are used as a commodity. The children are used there in order to provide wages and salary for school teachers.
They're there to get a public education.
They are not getting a Ms. Forrest. They should be there to get an education, but they're not being educated. It's a shame the way they just juggle these children around for some some economic purpose that the children never realize in their own community.
The question is why? Why is that happening?
That lies within black society. Black society have all the necessary talents, skills, and means to change this situation around. But they don't do it. Look who controlled the economy in these black population centers. Blacks don't control them. You don't have anything to leave your children. Your previous black generation left their children with nothing. Then they want to accuse their children, give them responsibilities of being a parent, blaming on parents when they never was taught to be a parent in their previous 12 years of school.
Let's pull back a layer. So you just mentioned that a community. You mentioned that they don't own anything in that community. So when a black goes out to get a loan for that same store, same corner store that another person go out to get, that black person can't get that loan. I don't care if they do have the credentials, or that black person can't get into the banking community so they can own a bank. That black person can't get that mortgage. And in most cases, this is statistically proven. This is not my opinion. And so when you're talking about ownership, yeah, they don't mind us working for them, whoever that may be. But it's something different altogether when you're talking about providing opportunities for ownership. We're not provided those opportunities. And it's hard to pull yourself
right. I disagree. Look at your Somali refugees up in Minnesota. You know what kind of banking system they created? They created a Sharia banking system.
There you go. You just talked about an immigrant. I'm talking about African Americans.
How can you tell the difference? Now, you put a Nigerian, a Somali next to, other than your common African Americans or blacks on the street of Chicago, you have a difficult time telling who's who.
Other than
they dress.
When they open their mouth, when you look at their records, you can tell.
You ain't gonna be looking at nobody's records then.
How you gonna get a loan? I mean,
black children talking Ebonics is nothing to disgraceful. Come on now.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying not as far as improper or proper English.
There's nothing wrong with them children to develop a language of communication. That's another language. I think the latest somebody said earlier about who can speak more. Your black children develop a language of them own, a dialect of them own. There's nothing wrong with it, as long as they know how to speak other communicable languages like English, American English.
Absolutely. No disagreement there. But I wouldn't suggest that the African-American community has the means to pull themselves up by them bootstraps. I mean, there's a lot of things were institutionalized that were put in place so they could not get loans, they could not get mortgages. I mean, even the wealth that they had was destroyed. I mean, so to suggest that they have the same opportunity is not altogether true.
Well, you know, I've seen Arabs here in this city do things that provided the money for them to have what they needed to do. I mean, if they can do it, why come blacks can't do it? I mean, why come they can't do it? There's nothing stopping them from doing it. People with the proper qualifications can go in the bank and get money to run the operation. I know that personally. I don't want to use myself as an example, but it does happen.
Yeah, in pockets, not at the same rate as other groups. I'm just saying, if you just look at the data, the data shows you differently. And the next
it's
time
because I don't think we are doing it. We're not taking advantage, and we're not even concentrating. You tell your children to go to school and do what so they can get a good job. You tell your children, I'd be glad when you're 18 so you can hurry up and get out the house. You got five children out there on the street. They don't bought five living room sets, five dining room sets, five stoves, five refrigerators. We're doing the wrong thing. These other ethnic groups do not do that.
Again, the opportunities are not provided for African Americans like they are for others. I mean, it's hard to get you to see that because you've obviously had a different experience, and that's okay. But I'm just saying, but when you look at the reality, when you look at the data shows
you in Georgia, right?
No, I'm not. I'm in Dallas.
Well, she's in Georgia, I think she said. Look at Maynard Jackson, what he did with the airport. He took money and said, this is going to who? This is going to black contractors.
Absolutely.
You know why come blacks' politics are so lousy? Because you don't have any viable business to pay for your politics. All you do is vote. Other people pay for the campaign, pay toward the campaign for those black faces, those candidates, and black folks just come out and vote without putting any demands. You got a black president there in Washington, D.C., and you don't know how to use him.
Right. I can agree with that. I can agree we're not harnessing the power that we have. And we mentioned that earlier today, and primarily because we don't exercise the right to vote. But it all comes down to economics, as you so eloquently stated. But what I'm saying is, and my argument is still the same, is that getting that foot in the door, getting that first bank, because when you're talking about getting a bank or sitting down at the table with other bankers that don't look like you, they're just not going to let you in.
Well, I wouldn't want to know if you had owned a black banker, you going to give loans to unresponsible people? Come on now. You're going to use the same stringent rules that any other bank uses.
The one issue that I have is that you paint such a broad stroke. And in painting such a broad stroke, you create such a defeatist attitude about everybody.
No, I'm not, defeatist in attitude because there's a lot of people that's doing just opposite of what we're talking about, ma'am. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. But in several of your statements in the last 15 minutes that I've been quiet, it's been what people don't do. You talk about the education system, and if I am correct in my thought process in terms of what happens and what did happen in the public school, a lot of things that happened in the public school happened in states and in systems where it was not about people of color that was in positions to make those decisions. So you had people making decisions about what was going to be taught in school. Kids aren't even learning in this day and age how to write in cursive. They don't even know.
But whose fault is that? That ain't white folks' fault. That's black people's fault.
We're not the ones making those decisions.
All right,
So when you have people making decisions about a whole system, public schools, it's not just attended by black people. Let's be clear about that. I am a product of public school, and I did well. I'm doing well. And I'm not ashamed of my public school education. But with the difference from my time and now, it is vast in terms of what they're being taught, in terms of how they're being taught, in terms of what expectations are. And that's the school board. Your state education department making those decisions. That's Washington with their No Child Left Behind making those decisions. That's not me, the parent, making that decision.
Have you read your state constitution as it applies to education? Your state constitution is going to tell you that whatever the concerns of the curriculum is based on the local concerns. In other words, the local concerns create the curriculum. The state has nothing to do with that. The state sets minimum standards that your child has to meet. You can have African-centered curriculums. You can have Australia, Russia, and all these other crazy curriculums I see imposed upon our children in these public schools. Not the African-centered ones now. Well, I've seen some excellent things come out of those. But that is the local concern, not the state. When you survey black populations, over 70% of them say they want school choice. But what organization, what vanguard organization would stoop so low to file lawsuits against public school district and other concerns when they want to have school choice? The NAACP. They did it in Philadelphia. They did it here in St. Louis, where they threatened outstate legislature that if they went along with a scholarship program, they would accuse them of being racist. That's Negroes doing that. That ain't white folks doing that.
Now, as I was stating, when you talk about curriculums and you're talking about what kids are being taught at school and you talk about standardized tests and you talk about these tests now that seem to be more important, you teach to a test as to what a kid learned, that has an impact on everybody. When you're closing schools and building jails and prisons, that's a problem.
Well, they should close the schools.
It may not be a problem to you, but that's a problem to me. So
you say they shouldn't close the schools? Are you saying that they shouldn't close the schools?
I don't think just like they want to all of a sudden change the formula on how we come up with voting rights. They need to look at the formula they do for closing schools.
The simple formula for schools is how many students you have. They closed 38 schools in Philadelphia. They closed about 35 here in St. Louis.
And they're going to build, how many prisons they're going to build in Philadelphia after they close the schools?
In 2008, let me tell you something.
Because they were talking about closing schools for money. So if you've got money to build prisons, you got money to keep your schools open.
Well, yeah, they're going to take advantage of your children. If you don't have something for your children to do, somebody else is going to do. But let me tell you something. In Philadelphia County, Pennsylvania.
There you go with that broad stroke.
In Philadelphia County.
You just put a broad stroke on everybody and their child. And that's
in Philadelphia County, Pennsylvania, in 2008, black women aborted 18,600 babies. 5 years later, when it's time for them kids to go to elementary school, they ain't there. So guess what happened? They closed the schools. You contributed to your own demise. That's something nobody wants to talk about.
Did the same thing
here in St. Louis. They closed 35. There ain't no children. I participate with a boys and girls club in the inner city, and we can't find enough students to even fill our baseball teams. Children. When blacks let their own facilities run down, they don't have businesses to contribute to those facilities in order to provide them with the latest in technology for their children. Blacks will run past those dilapidated facilities in the city, take their children out to the south, into the counties where it's all white, and try to put their children on those teams, making white players sit on the bench. White parents don't like that because they built that for their own kids. Why come blacks don't build it for their own kids in the cities?
Again, it goes back to economics. I mean, I think you present a lot of great points, and you're talking about a lot of the symptoms, but we're not really talking about the real core problem, and the core problem is economics.
The core problem is economics. You're absolutely right. We don't control our own economics. The things that we need for sustenance that we consume, we do not manufacture and produce. Opening a chicken restaurant and having blacks come in and sit down and order a chicken dinner, eat a chicken is not supporting a black business. Until you process those chicken, until you distribute those chicken and transport those, that is supporting that black chicken business.
Right.
We don't want to do that.
But the key point that I've been trying to hammer on is the fact that getting that initial startup cost, that initial first $1 million it takes to do it right, not just to stand up something because you can say you own a business, not just to open up a check, but to open up a viable business, you need capital to do that. And most businesses fail because they don't capitalize properly. And you can only capitalize when you can go out and get loans and you can go out and get a line of credit and you can kind of go out and get those things. And you cannot tell me that that is happening in African-American communities because they don't have access to the same capital.
Well, it is happening in black communities. I can name, like I say.
Not in the numbers.
Well, the reason why, because it's black, sir, come on. It's me and you talking.
Right, absolutely.
I'm me and you. Mm-hmm, we've been knowing each other for, we know what a major problem is. We gotta get away from this. Our children don't want to hear this. Our children don't want them to be, we telling them to pull up their pants. What else you got to offer them?
Yeah,
we talking
to
our children
so
like they're defective. There's nothing wrong. It's the adult in the black community. It's those knuckleheads, the old heads. That's where the problem lies now,
but you're talking about, again, you're talking about it's the adults. When you're talking about a majority of the men are incarcerated, right? And then so you take all the men out of the communities, and then you don't provide economic opportunities for that same community. It's a infrastructure failure.
They talked about Gaddafi being in power for 40 years. You got some Negroes in some of these cities that's been on the automatic board, the council for 30 years, 40 years themselves. Mm-hmm. And look at their communities.
And you got people in Washington and in every state house and across the country, black, white, green, or purple, that's been there for too long as well. So
you got one
not,
in your state named Lewis.
I'm not in, you confuse me. I'm not in Georgia.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
But name me your state. I can name one.
I'm in Texas right now, but I know a little bit about Missouri as well, and Kansas, and Colorado.
And I guarantee you, yes,
I
can name a Bosley's and Clay's. You're absolutely right. Missouri got Negroes that's been around too long, too.
But it's not just. You're doing the broad stroke again. I would respect everything you had to say if you didn't paint such a broad stroke. When you paint such a broad stroke, you make it easy.
Well, who else should we include in this stroke, ma'am?
I want to include everybody because there are
you
people
can't include everybody.
Every
white people are not going to provide you. Whites are not going
to
provide you with
anything.
The necessary things where you can compete against their children.
Absolutely, what I'm saying.
I think we all agree to that. We all agree to that. And that's not the expectation. The expectation
that's
is not to get a handout or not for somebody to give something. We're just saying create a level playing field. That's all we're saying.
The playing field is about as level as it's going to get.
Oh,
they are never going to give you what you need to have to compete against their children. You got
and
to
if,
take
if,
that.
If your only way of beating me is to cheat and to hold me back, then shame on you. And that's
well,
all,
I
that's
cheat too.
Thing.
I used to own a business. I cheated.
but what we're saying is that you're saying that other people can come in. This was your statement. Other people can come in, and they can do all of these wonderful, great things. And I'm saying that they have a better opportunity space to work in than the existing African American community has to work in. That's not to remove any of the responsibility from them, but when you look at the infrastructure that's put in place and the obstacles that they have to overcome,
I have to disagree with you there because I tell you, Nigerians, Ghanaians, you got black African. You know who had the highest educational attainment of any immigrant? Who outperforms any immigrants in these schools? If
probably
it wasn't African. For their numbers on your, if it wasn't for their numbers in the university and college system, you would actually have more black males in prison than you do in college. It's them African immigrants.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm saying that their opportunities they have a better opportunity space than native local African.
Their families have higher household incomes than whites in Queens, New York. It's black African immigrants who have mother and father who have higher household incomes than whites. Asians have 25% larger household income than whites.
And you're helping me make my point. I'm saying that this immigrant space that you're talking about, they have a better opportunity than those of local native African Americans that were born here in the United States that have
but
gone
how do you
through
tell the difference from?
Legacy. I mean, you tell the difference from their culture, their language, their habits, their records. I mean, it's a lot of different ways. I mean,
unless they open their mouth,
the
you wouldn't know the difference. So to say that somebody is looking at this black here and picking one out there, that's not
I'm not by no stretch of the imagination. I'm saying it. I'm just saying that the opportunity space when you go out and you look at these same two same two packets. One packet says, you know, these same two bank loans, for example. When you look at the wealth of records that go along with those two bank loans, I don't care what the score is. The score can be the same. In the majority of cases, the African American that was natively born here will not get
the
same opportunity.
Then we
got
to come up with a different way of doing it. We have to have a way to supplement it just the way they do. And, you know, I'm going to get back to one other thing, education. You have excellent black schools. Marcus Garvey in what? South Central L.A. Where children come out of the school in the seventh grade, pass their GED, pass a college entrance exam, and carrying 13 to 19 units in college at 13 years old. Why come public schools, black public schools, are not mimicking what they're doing?
Resources. They don't have the same level of education.
These are private schools. They don't have the resources that these public schools have. These public school children, their average daily allocation total may be upwards of $17,000 a year. That tuition school is about $7,000 a year at Marcus Garvey. You got the Council of Independent Black Institutions, who back
where's
in the 70s got tired of that, and they created their own schools.
But that money is subsidized by businesses. That money, this private school is subsidized by businesses. It's subsidized by participation of those communities.
And
those
when it said they do not have no $18,000 a year, my question is this. Why come they don't duplicate what those children are being taught in those settings,
in your
public schools?
Again, I'm going to go back to the
who's
to my,
in
to
charge
my
in the
point.
Public schools
resource.
At the local
resource.
At your local district superintendent, who's in charge?
We have a black board.
So who's in charge?
The black board.
And what are their allocations based on?
The allocations are based on their child sitting in that seat until 11:30 in the morning, and where they account
no,
it, so money comes to that it's, building.
No, that's not the only thing it's based on. It's also based on that environment. It's also based on what taxes is coming into that system.
Yeah, absolutely.
So don't play
well, I'm going to tell y'all something.
It's
see, y'all picked the wrong
kids.
Person to have this discussion
no,
with.
No,
so you're going to tell me that the black people, you're going
to
tell me that the blacks in Prince George County, Maryland, who has the average household, the average home is about $450,000. You mean to tell me that those black children in Prince George County don't have the money and the resources? But they
no,
put up
that,
dismal
that,
academic
that,
records. Come on now.
That was not your question, though. Your question was about two other places. And I'm pretty sure.
I was addressing her concerns. She mentioned resources. The resources are there.
No, but the resources in the school district that you're saying is performing poorly versus this private school that was performing better than that. What I'm saying is when you have that disparity, in most cases, it's about resources. That's part one. But
well,
it's not, for instance,
look at charter schools. When a child leaves the public school traditional district, they only take about $5,500 with them to their charter school. And there's charter schools here that's outperforming that district, that school building where that child came from, with only $5,500.
But let me go back to my point about resources again, right? So you're saying that these public schools, they don't have the same amount of resources. And when you're talking, I'm not just talking dollars, right? Because those private schools with the less amount of dollars you're referring to, they get subsidized by businesses and tax dollars, right? So we can't discount that. But these schools that are performing poorly is not just because they are just because of resources. There are other factors involved too. Like, for example, I mean, there are studies out there to show that when you have two parents in the home, a child does better. When you're talking about food and the fact that there are a lot of children are hungry when it's time to learn. When you're talking about access to other things outside of the classroom, those communities don't have that level of.
They may be hungry, but they sure ain't starving.
Well, but they're hungry in many cases.
They have food. They have breakfast program. They have lunch programs. They have dinner
programs
for those who stay.
Those things are all not nutrition. You're talking about we're gonna say.
You know what, sir? I agree with you. But what happened when we had black women in the kitchens of these public schools cooking food that was produced locally? Who gave that up? And why come we don't recreate it? Whereas we can compete against these foreign companies that control your lunch provide your lunches for your schools. That's your Sodexo from France and your Aramac from the UK. Why do we permit that?
Well, when you look at the fact that a lot of these companies that came in and destroyed the soil or the environment of these African American communities, and I have multiple instances where we can talk about that, you can't grow in these communities anymore. And even if you try to grow in these communities, you're talking about a high propensity for cancer. So when you had an opportunity, when I go back to the schools about resources, when you're talking about monetary resources, and also when you're talking about having local teachers of that community were a part of that school, you had kids doing better. When you had both parents in the home, when you had community, those schools doing better. When you have highly educated school teachers, those schools do better. We don't have that anymore. And when you're talking about nutrition, the environments of a lot of these communities, you don't even see plum trees anymore, because this is something that naturally grows in communities, but there you don't see them anymore because primarily the soil is destroyed. So you have to import your food because you can't grow it in your local communities anymore.
Well, right. We should be importing our food from black farmers in Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia.
And speaking of black farmers, look at the black farmers bill that couldn't get out of Congress for many, many, many months.
I agree with you on that one.
There should be more
hooping and hollering over that particular fact.
So my point goes back to infrastructure, right? The fact that the same opportunities are not afforded to these African American communities that are local, native, growing here, like it is afforded to those immigrants. And so, a lot of the things you said, I totally agree with. We can't have this handout attitude. We can't have this attitude of I need you to help me. But we still need a level playing field. We still need the same opportunities that those immigrants are getting, or the same opportunities other Americans.
No, I don't look at it like this. I'm gonna tell you what we need. We need to develop. And nurture our political representatives. We need to give them their marching orders. Then we need to fund them. Wait a minute, let me finish. And they need to go to the state house. They need to go to the Congress and get as much money as they possibly can and bring it back to their community. This stuff about being equal and stuff. See, I believe in do unto others before they can do unto you. Wherever we got that other crap is crazy. If I was doing math, I would never teach my children to learn how to do subtraction and division. All they need to know how to do is multiplication and addition.
Man, but I mean, in theory, that's all wonderful, right? But in reality, in this world we live in, it is not the case. I mean,
blacks have in West Africa. They have given blacks in Ghana 30,000 acres of land right on the Volta River, Volta Lake, freshwater lake.
What happened to the land they pumped?
Utilizing that. You could be manufacturing and growing and producing in that country and importing back in this country. You have trade regulations that permit things to come in here duty and tariff free into our population markets. We should control them.
Well, yeah, China is trying to control Africa now. I'm glad to see the president.
Well, I don't blame them. If black Americans don't want to control it, nobody's going to sit by and wait for you. I tell you what, lay a $100 bill on the sidewalk. If you don't pick it up, somebody else will.
How in the world are we going to – you mentioned about Africa, which I think is a great idea, by the way. But if we can't grow our land, we can't own any land here or grow lands here, and we can't capitalize on our own business, how are we going to get a plane to import stuff from over there in Africa? I mean, so we need to start small, and I think we need to evolve into that, because I think it's a great idea. But we need to take care of others first.
There are, as I said before, the infrastructure to get things from there here exists. All you need to do is go over there and produce it. And man, Koreans do it. They don't have no special ship called Korean ship that ships stuff over here. Koreans control the produce in the tri-state area. They took it from the Jews.
Korean Air.
No, they don't bring that. You can't bring that stuff over on airline. That's too expensive. We need ships.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is, what y'all saying, I understand. But we got to get away from that, because the thing is, you know, just the fact that you have a conversation, most blacks don't even have these conversations. They have a conversation on stupid things like love relationships and all that old crazy stuff. Who in the hell is going to want to be married to somebody that ain't got no job? You can't put no love in an envelope and pay no damn bills.
That's right.
We have to put in place education system that's specific, just like the Indians done back in India done back in the late 1940s when they created all them information technology schools.
Mm-hmm,
and look
mm-hmm.
what they're doing today.
Oh yeah, they're taking over. When it comes to technology, they and in fact, I just read that they just took over the contract in China. The Indians did because they booted out the Chinese. So they
why
are really
come we don't have
over.
Call centers in Africa? How come black Americans who know how to do this don't create call centers in African countries where the labor is comparable or even more affordable than what even in China is getting? You know, China is not going to remain the same in everything as they are today.
Yeah, I mean, but again, it goes back to saying I have the ability and I have the desire. But do I have the opportunity? No. Those opportunities are just
no,
not just,
you do have the opportunity. I disagree with you. You do have the opportunity. All you got to do is just do it. Believe me.
Yeah.
You know what I've done for a living? You know the buildings that fell down in 9/11 in New York? I
mm-hmm,
erected
mm-hmm.
those buildings for nearly 40 years. Last 10 years of my career, I had my own company doing it. So don't say you don't have the opportunity. You just got to make up your mind and say, this is what we're going to do. That's one reason why I'm happy as hell to see the United States starting to slip.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any way possible that I could fix it so when tomorrow morning come at 7 o'clock, there's no white folks in this country at all, and just sit back and watch blacks fall out on the floor, on the ground, and roll around, crawl high.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I was talking earlier about the browning of America and the fact that, you know, now that the president is over there in Africa and the fact that he's talking about bringing more Africans back over to America, you know, we have this opportunity where it's going to be not necessarily an African-American, but an Africa-America. What do you think about that?
Black America is an economic market that we need to control ourselves. That's what Republicans put in place. Who was it that had your civil rights or laws back in the 1800s? Republicans put those in place.
Yeah.
All your civil rights laws came out of Republican administration.
Mm-hmm.
Every last one of them. Affirmative action came out of Republican.
Mm.
Black unemployment has been less under 10% during Republican administration since Nixon up until Obama.
Well, that's primarily because of these state jobs, right? Those government jobs. I mean, it's not because of Obama. I mean, the fact that while he's in office, all he's talking about is cut government spending. People buying into that notion. And that notion, the fact that, you know, you're talking about cutting government jobs, those are where the African-Americans were primarily employed.
You're right, because they received less discrimination there than they did out in the normal workplace.
There you go.
Nothing is going to last forever.
I agree,
nothing
but those opportunities were – those opportunities were afforded, and so they climbed the corporate ladder, and then the first opportunity they got it taken away. So, I mean, I think we're
and
pretty
it's those
much
blacks like, that climbed those corporate ladders that should have came, and I ain't going to say that they should have, but the ideal thing was them to come out of those corporations, create their own businesses, competing against that corporation that they worked for. As you a salesperson for a major corporation, look at all the contacts you have developed and the friendship that you had to develop. If you came out of it and started your own thing, how many of those contacts could you continue?
Well, it depends. I mean, sometimes there are legal frameworks in place that puts those conflict of interest clauses in there, and then you have a delay before you can even interact with any of those businesses for two to three years. So those relationships, especially nowadays, they move at the speed of light. So although you may have a relationship with a company that you're working for, in 6 months that relationship could be gone because that contract could have moved on, especially in the financial markets.
In the financial market, but in the manufacturing production, what little that there are. And you as an American citizen has access to patents, technology patents, and the patents that we're not utilizing. Look at all the patents we have access to that we can take. That technology we can take other places and duplicate. What do we receive?
Not free, though.
What do we receive from – what do Canada import into the United States? Why can't we look at whatever that is and go duplicate that in West Africa? let's use our affirmative action not for jobs, but saying, look, Walmart, we want 15% of your shelf space. Macy's, Target, Kmart, we want 15% of your shelf space for you operating here within the black community.
It's a capital.
You can go
that.
To Del Monte, and Del Monte will put your label on their green beans. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do in order to change. And matter of fact, these things are going to happen whether we want them or not.
And it might. It,
that's the only way you're going
to
survive.
It might happen with us. Absolutely. You got to. You have to do that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And,
well, we're about to.
And
close
you know
our
it, y'all. You just got to. Got to change our message a little bit, especially to our young people. Our young people don't want to hear what they can't do. Why do you think rappers created what they did? They got tired of it. They created their own things. Look at Jay-Z. Look at the empire that he's building.
Amazing, amazing, amazing story.
Yes, it is.
Amazing story, absolutely.
So I really appreciate the time, and
I
will
sit there eating. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate you calling in. I would love to have you call back. I mean, we do this every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, and we do cover real substances topics. And again, we really appreciate you joining us today. Any
well, I appreciate comments? What you're doing. I appreciate what you're doing also, and the lady, what she's doing too. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Jima, any final thoughts?
No, I do not have any final thoughts except for it is Sunday, last Sunday in June, which is primarily usually reserved for the BET Awards. And I'm excited to be here to watch the BET Awards because Uncle Charlie Wilson is getting an award, which means R. Kelly is going to be in the house. The red carpet seems to be popping off on Twitter, everybody talking about what everybody wearing. So it's going to be a night to see. After this conversation, I need to watch BET.
So what you got? What's in the queue for you next week? Talk a little bit about the program that we have at church.
Yes, at Faith Missionary Baptist Church in Rowlett, Texas. As I've stated, we have started our summer feeding and reading program from ages 4 up until 18. Although anyone can come in and eat as young as 1 to eat or whatever. But the program itself is from ages 4 to 18, and we do everything from math, reading, writing. We cover all subjects. We have some crafts. They go outside and they play. They read every day for 30 minutes as we partner with one of the local elementary schools. And we know for sure that all kids lose something in reading every year. And so we try to keep that gap a little bit tighter as opposed to further apart. And so what we encourage them, we require them to read every day for 30 minutes. We partner with the Rowlett Public Library, and so we're part of their reading program. They get different certificates and fun things and coupons to different things. So we just had a great time these first two weeks that we've been open. It's been great. We've had a ball. We have a six-week program this year. So if you're in an area, if you want to donate some supplies, you want to donate your time, you want to donate, bring some kids by. You know some kids that need some community service or something, and you want to show them and let them see what serving is all about. You can come on by the church. We're located in Rowlett. Once again, the name of the church is Faith Missionary Baptist Church. Our website is www.houseoffaith.org. And or you could just hit me up on Facebook, on Twitter, and let me know what you'd like to do. And my Facebook, Jima Cahill Cook, and Twitter is Ask Jima. That's AskJema.
All right, wonderful. And you know, I like the last caller there because he was really talking about solutions, you know, and the fact that you know we should take a perspective of going out and making this effort to do these wonderful things. And I think. We've been doing that for many, many, many years. In fact, the summer program provides us another opportunity to do that, to continue to move forward, to continue to make progress. And I really appreciate all of the volunteers that come out, the fact that we're continuing to feeding hungry children, the fact that we're continuing to educate our community, and the fact that we stay involved. We're not just sitting around talking about these issues, but we're trying to move these issues forward. So I appreciate all the efforts that you're doing as well.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJima. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. All right. Enjoy your 4th of July, everybody. We'll see you.